Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Just before we jump into the episode this week, I wanted to share a little bit about the Thrive community that I run. It's a place where many like-minded women go to connect and share their experience with getting and staying successfully sober. There are different sections, like the main Thrive community feed, where people post about things that are up and coming or about challenges they're facing, and they get incredible support from other members of the group. It really is a special, special place to be right now. There are also sections to share your milestones, because every win, even the really small ones, are a big thing to celebrate, and we acknowledge that. There are Thrive events, there are the weekly Zoom recordings, so you can go back and see all the weekly Zoom meetings and all the topics that have been covered in those meetings at your own leisure. There's a share sober tips section, and then there are group chats for the first 30 days, the first 100 days, the first year, and over a year. There's a knowledge hub as well, and in the knowledge hub you'll find a place for books and book recommendations. There's a section of how to survive the first 30 days, so if you come in completely brand new to getting sober, you can hit the ground running and find tools and information to get a structure set up for yourself from the outset. There's also my Thrive Sober program, there's a toolkit, there's understanding the brain science, and a space to read and learn about all the topics under emotional sobriety, most of which have been written by myself. So come into Thrive. If you're thinking about it or you're lacking community, I would say just jump in and go for it. And maybe we'll see you in there soon. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm talking to Georgie, who's in Somerset, and she's 132 days sober. Thank you so much for joining me today, Georgie.
Hi, yeah, lovely to be here.
Oh, that's good. Good start. So why don't you tell us a bit about who you are, and then we'll jump into your story, if that's okay.
Yeah, well, I'm Georgie, and I live in Somerset with my partner, Nick, and my son, Josh, and I have a very busy life. I teach Pilates, I do sports massage, I do Reiki, I do intuitive reading, I treat horses' backs, and I teach horse riding. So a lot of stuff going on, keeps me busy. And I love to be busy, so that's good. I think it helps the ADHD mind.
Sure, it's so funny. I'm on a bit of a journey with this myself. I don't want to derail the conversation, but I am going to get tested for ADHD and potentially autism. And okay. I don't know what it is, like, since this became on my radar, I feel like I have my feelers. I for some reason, I kind of knew straight away that you would be ADHD. Isn't that weird? Do you get that? Do you sometimes get that when you meet someone, you just know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think a lot of people that maybe have drank too much have ADHD anyway. I think it's the way we cope. I think it's definitely been part of my journey.
Yeah.
So my story with alcohol started, well, my childhood on paper would be amazing. I had ponies. I lived in the countryside. But my parents argued a lot. They drank a lot. And although they were there time-wise, they probably weren't there emotionally at all. And I'm quite an emotional, highly strung person. Probably that's the ADHD. So I started drinking probably when I was 12 by stealing alcohol. Yeah, so quite young.
That's young, yeah. I mean, 14 is young, but 12 feels really young.
Yeah, and that wasn't all the time, but it was just like I'd do that and I'd be a bit naughty.
Yeah.
And then as I got sort of my teenage years, I realized it made me popular. If I stole booze and took it to things, it made me more confident, helped me talk to boys, and generally, well, quite quickly, I knew I didn't really have a stop button. I'm all in.
Yeah.
I'd go to parties in my teens and my 20s and I'd pass out before the party because I'd have drank so much. And then I'd wake up and everyone was going home. And I'd go, oh, no, no, I want to party. And they're like, Georgie, you've been asleep. I'm like, oh, okay. But I still didn't think it was a problem. And then in my early 20s, I drank more, probably not every day at this point, but I drank a lot when I went out. I'm always the person that wants the after party, never wanted it to be the last drink.
Yeah.
And my nickname, and has been until the last few years, was Duracell Bunny, the machine, because I could function doing the horse and everything on no sleep. And so I just keep going. And that was my life. So I rode horses for a living. I'd party all night and then I'd work all day and I'd work very hard. So because I could still function, it was still deemed fine. And I didn't really get hangovers, really ever. So I could keep going at that pace. All my relationships, and there were many, were sort of all around booze, recreational drugs as I got to my mid-20s. And what I know now is it was all escapism, but I didn't know that at the time. And so I just kept going and going until I was 20, well, nearly 26. 3 days off my 26th birthday, I got on a horse and it reared over backwards and it crushed my spine. And it was pretty, well, it was a 40% chance I'd walk again. So it was a big thing. I did 7.5 weeks in traction in hospital. But after the first week, my father moved me to a private hospital where they actively encouraged me to drink. Because obviously with an ADHD person in bed, not being able to move, a muscle, you know what I mean, not allowed to move, they thought it was the best thing for me.
So did you know by that point you had ADHD?
No, no, this is a very recent thing.
You're right. So they just thought that you were, a bit hectic and hyper. So they then said, just drink.
Yes. So my friends used to come in. So it was a bit of a joke coming into the hospital. If somebody came in with a bottle of wine, oh, you go see Georgie. And my friends would come into the hospital room at the weekend and we'd get pissed in the room. They'd stay in the room. Anyway, so when I came out, so it was fine while I was in, came out when I was on my own. So I felt I couldn't do anything at all. I was in a full brace. And I sort of lie in bed till 11 o'clock in the morning, go downstairs and pour a glass of wine.
Oh.
Because I didn't really know how to cope with the new me, because I've always been able to do everything and keep up with everything. And all of a sudden it was like a full stop.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I'd be able to ride again and my career.
And you're quite young as well, right?
Yes, quite young. Yeah. Other people started to notice that I might have a problem with booze then.
Right.
And asked, did I have a problem with alcohol? And of course, I just brushed it off. No, I'm fine. This is me. And I was in a relationship where we drank every day and went to the pub. So it was all, I drank all day and I went out to the pub. I started riding again and it was all fine. But I then had 4 temporary paralysis over the next 4 years. The fourth one, I was on morphine for 5 months. And I drank a lot. This is probably my lowest point. I dragged a leg. And then somebody, when I was teaching horse riding one day, I had to be on a swivelly chair because I couldn't walk around, said, have you tried Pilates? And I said, no, I think it's shit because it's slow and it was, you know, really not my kind of thing. And she said, well, go and try machine Pilates. Anyway, that saved me. I thought I need a new career. I can't ride horses competitively anymore. So I'm going to become a Pilates teacher. And you know what? That's what saved me. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my change of direction. And don't get me wrong, I'm still drinking at this point a lot. And I think at this point, I decided my drinking and partying was out of control. And I lived in Derbyshire at the time. And a friend I'd known for 14 years, he's 10 years older than me. I thought we'd go out. He'd always chased me. I'd never gone out with him. But I thought he'd calm me down and I'd liven him up. That was a bit of a silly idea. But so that didn't really happen. We tried for children and I was told I was infertile, but that was another rabbit hole for me to go down. I started drinking and smoking loads more because I was that, you know, emotionally I was out of control. And then I had my son, which is a bit of a miracle, which is great. And he's been the absolute savior of me as well. And then for the next 3 years, my ex-husband controlled my behavior and my alcohol. And then I left. But I left with nowhere to live. So I sofa surfed for 3 months. And I used to stay with my best friend when I had my son so that he had a stable base. But it was another excuse for me to drink more, to smoke more, to, I didn't go back into the recreational drugs, but I, you know, I was out of control again. And then about another year later, my health started to go. And I didn't know exactly when it was, but I've remembered through writing this down, I got a sunbed machine to stand up in before my 40th birthday to make myself feel a bit better, because I had chronic fatigue. And I remember I couldn't stand up for 15 minutes just to do that. I was so tired. I was in bed all the time. Josh would have to wake me up to take him to school. And then I'd get in the car and then I'd come back and I'd go back to bed. And I've always been a workaholic, so not being able to work didn't help. The doctors couldn't help me. I ended up going to a functional medicine doctor because by this time I was going to the toilet 30 times a day. I was really, really ill and I didn't know what was wrong with me. She sent me to a somatic psychotherapist. I had to change all my diet. And it was sort of revolutionary for me. He was like, okay, so who is Georgie? And I said, well, I don't know. And then he was, how do you feel? I don't think I've ever felt. And it was really, it was the start of this journey that I'm on now. He, you know, taught me how to feel. He suggested I gave up alcohol. Then the functional medicine doctor said I had to give up alcohol for 12 weeks. I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. Who am I without alcohol, for one? And two, I've always drank. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And then after 12 weeks, I decided that I was a better person not drinking. And it was a sort of a light bulb moment for me. I was in a relationship with a landlord, so you can sort of see where my sort of boyfriend sort of went. And I decided after I gave up alcohol, I couldn't really go out with him anymore. It was wild. It was drinking. Even if we didn't drink Monday, Tuesday, it was three bottles of red wine on a Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, wall-to-wall alcohol. I couldn't live in that environment. I needed to take myself away. And I gave up alcohol for 10 months. I did a lot of work on myself, on inner child and shadow and all those things I'd never heard of before, and healed myself. And then lockdown happened. And lockdown for me, I moved into my ex-marital house. He wasn't living there, but for me, it was a lot of skeletons there, and I was on my own. I was single and everyone else was drinking, and I thought, I can moderate. I've done 10 months. I can moderate. I'll be absolutely fine. And that first day I had one glass of red wine. I woke up with an awful hangover, funny, because I hadn't drank so long.
Yeah.
And then it was off. I was off again. I couldn't moderate. And I thought I could, you know, I'm quite a control freak. I like to be in control, but I was back to being Party Georgie and drinking all the time. And then we fast forward to now. And I think since then, this sort of holistic Georgie that does all these good things for herself against this sort of person then that goes mad and drinks too much and doesn't have the stop button sort of clash a lot in my head. And I think for the last year, it's been going all the time, do I stop to get that bottle of wine on the way back from work? Do I have one glass? do I have two glasses? But I still know the bottle's over there, even if I'm sitting in another room and it's not there. So I was like, right, I need to do something about this. And my best friend gave up alcohol. And she started off, and I kept thinking, no, I need to go on holiday. I need to go to this party. I need to do this. And then I stopped. But then I suddenly thought, I've had two breast cancer scares this year. And I've done a lot of research into it. One in 10 breast cancers is caused by alcohol. And I thought, why am I still doing this to myself? So that was one idea. The next idea was my son videoed me on one of my very last holiday on alcohol. And I was playing around with him and his best friend, and it was all fun and giggles and laughter. I looked at my face on that video, and who am I? I was, you know, I didn't recognize myself. I'm like, you are so drunk. Yeah. And I felt so ashamed. Yeah. Those last few weeks of drinking, every time I woke up in the morning, why did you do that? Why did you do that to yourself? And so then I gave up. And for me, this time, it's so different. There's a lot more. I didn't know Instagram before. So straight away, I listened to podcasts every day. I put myself on Instagram, first of all, not under a sober name, and then under a sober name. And that's really helped me. My boyfriend's been incredibly supportive. My family, although, have not, because they're all big drinkers. Because I listen to your podcast and everyone goes, oh, my family's so amazing. I'm like,
yeah. A lot of them do. Yeah. So actually, let's talk about that, because you are certainly not going to be alone in that. Like, there's probably lots of other people that listen to podcasts and also don't connect with that common story. So how has that played out for you, and what do you do to deal with that?
Well, I think for me, this time was a slightly strange time to give up. I just had a serious injury to my knee, and I had it replaced in December. So stopping, I couldn't go and do physical exercise like everyone else could, or go for a walk. So my whole family descended for Christmas 5 days after my knee replacement. And everyone was like, well, why aren't you drinking? Why can't you have a drink? You're not the same when you don't drink. And everyone was getting very drunk, and I was feeling it. It was really, really hard for me. Not that I wanted to drink, but no one would accept. They were going, yeah, we've seen you do this before. How long till you're back drinking? In fact, the friend that gave up drinking started drinking again probably February, halfway through February. And I felt like my leg had been cut off. And I was out for dinner with my mum, and I told her, she's going, yeah, Jodie, go, Jodie. I'm like, mum, that's so unsupportive.
Yeah.
And my stepfather the next night said, oh, we'll go for that restaurant when Georgie's back to normal. I am normal. This is me.
Yeah. Oh, they don't mean it, I think. It's hard though, isn't it? It's hard to be in those situations when you are seeking support and you are getting that kind of response. It is a little bit deflating, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think what I'd say to other people is stick to your guns, stick with what your inner belief is. Keep checking back in with podcasts or meditate on it. And you know what? My family have started to come around now. They know I'm a bit more serious. They're sort of accepting that I'm not going to have a drink. So I think it does come round eventually.
I had a similar thing. I think people, so a lot of similarities with your story actually, but I tried sobriety before, and I think because I'm always very into fads and doing big things, like making big changes, which for me is, I think, will be part of my, you know, learning about a potential ADHD, because obviously I'm not diagnosed yet, but I have, and then I would always tell everybody about it, about how passionately I'm into this thing, right? And people would be like, right, okay, you know, she's really serious. And maybe a month or two later, I'm just like, no, I've moved on. That's not a thing anymore. I've moved on. So I had the same types of responses when I got sober again. This time, people would be like, okay, well, when she's back, you know, we'll do this thing, and you know, and it, but you're right. I think in a weird way, I kind of had a real steely determination, and I wonder if that was the same for you. Just that, no, I think sometimes when you really, really do want something, you can, it can actually almost become a bit easy, weirdly, if you get into the right zone.
The first 100 days this time,
been
not a breeze. Of course it hasn't, because it's still getting to learn who I am without alcohol. But the first time was definitely more difficult because I didn't know who Georgie Barnes was without the alcohol.
Yeah. So 132 days in, you mentioned podcasts and bits and pieces. Yeah, what's this, what's the time been like? What have you done to support yourself, and what has come up perhaps that didn't before? You know, what makes it different to when you've done it before?
Well, I think I've gone even more into the self-care. So I've learned to do Reiki. I've become a lot more spiritual. I found out I'm so much more creative. I feel like alcohol has dumbed me down all my life. I've hidden from who I am, who Georgie is, really is. I've always just, oh, well, if I have a few glasses of wine, I won't feel that.
Yeah.
And so now I just feel so much more authentic to who I really am. And I have no apologies for being a bit eccentric and being a bit loud, but maybe not in the way that I used to stay out all night, you know, but I'm in my inner self.
Yeah.
The other things I've found, I've done cold water therapy. That really helps with the ADHD. Yeah. Dopamine fix. That things like that have really helped. Walking in nature, doing more yoga, doing breath work. I sound holier than thou, and I'm not, but all those things have helped me be able to sit on the sofa at night and not have that glass of wine, because I realize I run and then I use the wine to switch off and watch telly.
Yeah.
In the last 100 days, to start with, I really struggled and went to bed early, and now I've realized I get bored with TV, so I can only watch one episode of something. And then I might go upstairs and scroll for a bit or do something else. It's boredom, because I get easily bored.
It's so funny when you said the Duracell bunny comment. It's like a real light bulb moment for me. I've been called that all my, not so much recently. Well, I've been sober for 5 years and I'm not quite the same. I don't think I've got the same frantic energy that I had as a drinker, but all through my teens and 20s, and people would call me the Duracell bunny, or people would always say, I want some of what she's on.
Yes. Yeah, all the time.
And they say, you on drugs? And I'm like, and I, you know, I'd be working behind a bar or something, just like, natter. And they say, you know, I want what she's on, you know, give me some of what she's got. So it's really funny for me, because I would love to talk just a little bit about the ADHD thing for you and that related to drinking, because that is becoming a more prominent connection in this community of big drinkers, especially big drinking females. So what happened there then? When did you get that diagnosis?
I haven't got that diagnosis yet. I'm on a waiting list to get it, but every doctor I speak to, anyone that's got it, goes, Georgie, yes, there's no doubt you have ADHD.
Yeah.
And I think it's a superpower. So yeah. I changed my dyslexic diagnosis into a superpower, and it's how I cope with the ADHD, as in I choose everything and change everything into a hyper focus. So I don't mean this in a big headed way, but I'm pretty good at most things I do, as in, like, if I'm doing it, I'm doing it. I'm 100% in, I will research everything, and I'll be so in that. And luckily for me, the things I've done over the last 14 years, they have stuck, whereas before I'd probably try something, you know, I'm all into kettlebells, or I'm all into rowing, or I'm all into, you know, and now I seem to think the calming things sort of sit better with me.
That's really interesting, and I do think perhaps some people that are on a similar journey to us will probably find a lot of inspiration in that. And I'm the same as you. I think that's a total superpower. Don't get me wrong, there are sides of it. When I look back over my life growing up, there are definitely parts of it that I wasn't able to explain. I didn't know why I did those sorts of things. You know, that kind of feeling. Like I was in serial relationships too. You know, I always seeking comfort and validation. I came from
and
a very
love.
And love and love. Yeah. And I came from a very argumentative home as well. And I think I was highly emotional. And I remember my dad saying, just stop crying, and didn't mean it. My dad is the most lovely person ever. But you know, just all those types of messages that kind of, I guess, in a way, thwarting who you are or what you want to feel, and having just that boundless energy. I mean, people used to say to me when I was younger, don't give her blue smarties. You know, she's so. But I'd never made any of this connection until, funnily enough, it's actually one of my own children. I'm going through or going to be doing assessment for autism, but I do think there might be ADHD in my family as well with my kids.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute, where does that come from?
Yes.
And it's always like, for me, the penny's only just starting to drop. And I've even been on this podcast before and made kind of jokes about, you know, maybe I am, and never really thought about it too deeply. But for some reason, I'm going into hyper-focus mode because of my child and what she's experiencing, and that's just opening things up, and I'm like, oh my god, yeah, okay, I get it. But yeah, I think the serial relationships and the leaning on booze and drugs, you know, all of those things, I opened all of those doors, I felt like, at quite an early age, and I took to it all straight away. Do you know what I mean? Like I just took to it. And I think having that similarity in that just no off button, not being able to, but in a weird way, I'd always felt like my drinking was because of perhaps my home life, and maybe some of it was, but I thought it was more to do with kind of childhood trauma, and that's why. But now I feel like I'm starting to understand, oh no, just like you were saying, it's kind of helping you to deal with things.
It's definitely a bit of both, I'd say. You know, so I think ADHD, yes, it's on one scale, and I think then childhood trauma, we haven't dealt with childhood trauma, or I had a lot of trauma in my 20s, people dying in horse riding accidents, I had a friend murdered, I had a friend commit suicide. I mean, I've had a lot of trauma, and all I've ever done is run, because my ADHD brain helps me run. And this getting poorly was my body saying stop.
Yeah,
because it couldn't keep running anymore. The Duracell bunny ran out of batteries.
That's right.
One tip I'd say for me is I use Pilates for my body to get rid of any pain with my spine and all the other injuries I've had. But I use yoga for my mind and meditation for my mind and breath work just so I can come back to myself. Yeah. And I don't think I've ever been able to do that before. And the other thing I'd say about this time in sobriety, as I've learned to love myself, I actually like being on my own. I've never, ever wanted to be on my own. In my 20s, if someone cancelled going out, I would have to find somebody else to go out with. That's any week of the night. Any night of the week. I would always, always have to go out or have somebody round to drink with, or I never wanted to be on my own. Whereas actually now, I actually quite like my own company.
Yes. Yeah.
It's revolutionary.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I would say I'm similar to that as well. And I love the bit you said about the, you didn't realize how creative you were. When I stopped drinking, I got really into crocheting.
Yeah.
I'm so desperate to knit, and I love gardening and flowers, and it's just all
that. Yes, I love gardening too. Yeah.
I just fed into all that stuff, but I could lose myself in doing that stuff for hours if I had the opportunity to, which with a husband and three kids, I don't very often. But yeah, I mean, I could get lost in that stuff. So in terms of your, what are the bits in the journey for you this time that you have found challenging, would you say?
How other people perceive me. So that wild Georgie isn't necessarily there. I went to Cheltenham, was it 2 weeks ago, with my big drinking friends from Staffordshire, and it was lovely and I really enjoyed the day and I didn't want a single drink. But then we went to a club afterwards and everyone was so drunk, and I I found that challenging. I didn't want to make small talk with men that were pissed or just to make conversation. And I left. And I think on the way home, I had a little cry to myself on the way down the motorway thinking, is wild Georgie disappeared forever? And I'm probably still wild. I'm just wild in a different way. But I think it was a little bit like, oh,
yeah,
that's quite sad.
It's a grieving, isn't it? There is definitely a grieving. But I think what my experience has been is that I very much had that grieving and I very much had those feelings as well, just thinking, I don't find this shit interesting anymore. I used to thrive in this environment. I was the life and soul of these environments. And now
I was a ringleader.
I made everyone drink one more bottle more than they ever wanted to. That was my role and I embraced it. And I remember not realizing that I didn't fit into that anymore, realizing that I actually didn't enjoy it, realizing that I deep down I didn't even want to really be in those environments. But that was sad. But I think part of that sadness for me, at least, was it was just the unknown. Really, it was just the unknown of not really knowing, well, what does everything look like now? And I think that took several months at least to slowly unfold to a point now where I could say, you know, years in, going to be 5 years next month. Thank you. Yeah, but it just rolls by so fast, you know. It's just this just becomes normal life, you know. At some point, I say this to people when I coach them. I say you focus on the days or all the things that you need to do to get sober, but literally one day sooner than you think, you will not think about your sobriety and you will just live your life in the new version of who you are, and you will be happy and you will cope with life on life's terms. But I think, I think for me, it was just that fear of the unknown and trying to accept that that version of me is going to go to bed and, you know, going to close the book and then let the new version come in.
I think some social situations I've been in, when I felt really happy and I knew everyone there, I've stayed up till 1 o'clock and I've been absolutely fine, actually. It was being in a sort of, it's in that environment where everyone's been drinking all day, I guess. Maybe it's a bit more like a wedding. I've got one of those to go to in September, and that I might feel different there because it's past a point, isn't it?
Yeah. But everyone's also on that, pretty much everyone is also on that collective drive to get high. Do you know what I mean? And I think when you're the one that's not doing that, then you do feel maybe sometimes like a bit of an outsider, at least I would say for the first few times you do those sorts of experiences. And I was the same. And then actually 3 years into my sobriety, I got married sober.
And I
was one of the only, you know, what I would class as youngies. I still class myself as a youngie at 46. I was the only sober one in the youngies. But I didn't care, you know. I mean, I was just so focused on how much I would, you know, just was enjoying the day and all the stuff and just getting married felt like a really big achievement. And, you know, I felt like I got there in the end or, you know, whatever. But I think I would have been different under a year, but certainly a few years in, and then having a sober wedding, I was delighted that I wasn't drinking. And I've been to weddings.
You can remember all of it, can't you?
Exactly.
You can remember the conversations, you can remember how special it was.
Yes, exactly. And I think that boundaries is a good thing to have in place in those situations. And just because it's a wedding, you don't have to stay there till 12 o'clock at night or 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, you can, after a long day at a wedding, which is a long day, let's be fair, and it is quite draining, socially draining, emotionally draining sometimes, if you're not drinking and you're going into, you know, having a sober day, I think sometimes going at 9 is perfectly acceptable when everything starts to go up another notch, even.
Yes. So I think I need to have better boundaries and not always being the driver.
Yeah.
Because actually by 11 o'clock I've had enough. Yeah. And then when they want to stay till 1 o'clock and go, where's the next bottle of rosé? And I'm like, oh, I'm tired now. I want to go home.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I want to get better boundaries. Yeah. I think I did. I remember the somatic psychotherapist saying to me, "So what are your boundaries?" I said, "What's a boundary?" I hadn't got a clue what a boundary was. I didn't have any at all.
No. Yeah, I relate to that too. And I think a lot of drinkers relate to that. I would say boundaries is, I think, is one of the biggies that people have to work on. And it's very, you have to learn it. Yeah, you have to practice it. And it's really like the first time you put those boundaries in place, it feels horribly difficult.
Especially when you've been a yes person all your life. Yeah, so you absolutely. Do say yes to everybody, yes to everything.
Yes.
And then, yes. It's putting yourself first.
It is. It you know, it's that history of saying yes to be liked, to be accepted, to be loved, to be needed. And, you know, it does feel very frightening dipping your toe in the, actually, it's a no from me. You know, that's very new. But I think it's like anything you practice. When you do it enough, you just get, I feel like I swing the other way now. And I have to try and remind myself to say yes to things. Because I've become a bit like a hermit. I love being at home. I love, like you say, love being on my own or with my family. And I don't go out all that much. I do lots of things. I do lots and lots and lots of things. Yeah. But I wouldn't say I socialize that much.
No.
But that's okay. But it's different to how I was as a drinker. As a drinker, socializing was a gateway to drinking and having drugs and all the rest of it. So it was obviously more prevalent. And when I was younger and before kids, obviously. So what's been the biggest gain for you in sobriety? What have you really gained?
Myself, knowing who I am, time is, I can't believe how many more hours there are in a day when you haven't opened the bottle of wine. Because as soon as you sit down on a Saturday, if you did open a bottle at lunchtime, then that's it, isn't it? You're done.
Yeah, you're done. Ooh.
Being out somewhere with Josh and trying to think, how can I get, if I stay there that long, I won't be able to have a glass of wine till then. I mean, you know, that's a horrendous way to think. But definitely where I was, reduced anxiety. There's so much more space in my head because I'm not thinking, do I have one glass of wine? I won't go too mad this weekend. Or I've got two big nights. How am I going to feel? And there's none of that there. It's all this space.
Yeah.
Which is so, so lovely. More in control of, as my boyfriend now would call me, chopsy sometimes when I had too much to drink, you know, just start to get a little bit chippy, a bit argumentative, not off the handle, but just, you know, little niggles.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a slow one, these two, because of the ADHD with the sleep. So for me, I drank to sleep so I could sleep. So my sleep got worse when I gave up alcohol rather than better, because my ADHD keeps me awake.
Yeah.
But since I've started fasting, now I'm sleeping. So I've now dropped the weight and also sleeping. So that's brilliant. But they didn't happen. Like some people don't, they from day one say, oh, I lost a stone in the first month. I gained weight to start with. Yes. You know? And I found it quite hard because I was like, oh my gosh, I gave up so I could sleep better and I could lose weight. And it didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is doing now, you know, my 4 months in.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. So what's the fasting? Just because I know people will be thinking, ooh, here's what we're bringing up. But also, I mean, this has become another more talked about topic with women of a certain age. I'm not putting you in that category.
Well, I have a certain age. Yeah.
I haven't talked about your age, but I just assume that you're a similar age to me.
Yes, I am.
It's mid-40s or so. And I know with perimenopause, menopause, fasting has become a bit of a hot topic. So what, just briefly, I know you're not a nutritionist or anything like that, but what are you doing just so that we can understand?
So I try and do 17 hours a day if I don't feel faint or tired. So I do listen to my body.
Yeah.
But for me, not digesting food has given me a lot more energy because obviously I've struggled with food digestion. And 17 hours is a magic number where your body gets rid of cancer cells and things that are going wrong in the body. So for me, that's, you know, I try and do 17 hours and it's not that hard. the way I did it was move my breakfast back by half an hour every 3 or 4 days. And then by the time then, you can wait till 2 o'clock in the afternoon before you have your first meal of the day. And I feel great on it. But like I say, if I get up one day and I'm really hungry, I'll have breakfast and it's not yeah. regimented. But the weight has just fallen off. I feel so much better.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. So what time do you have? Typically, do you have your breakfast then? Do you wait until more lunchtime or early?
So I'm probably not eating before 2 p.m. normally.
Okay.
And sometimes it's a little bit later, sometimes it's a bit earlier. And I then break the fast with a couple of hard-boiled eggs because that's apparently the perfect protein and fat ratio to break your fast. And then I eat pretty much what I want to eat. So I'm not being really good. I'll still have a pudding after dinner because I feel like I can because I haven't eaten all those things all day.
Yeah.
And yes, and then I'll finish eating by about 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it's much easier now because I don't drink wine. So there isn't that calorie cutoff that you have to do when you've had your last glass of wine. I can just have water or herbal tea in the evening and that's fine.
So you basically eat within a 7-hour window. That's essentially what you're, because I'm thinking for me, I'm quite, I love trying something new.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm thinking I actually always eat with my kids. And so we always finish dinner. We've all like always wrapped up our food by 6 p.m. So I could probably have breakfast at 11 and do it at 6. That would be more than achievable for me because I already have that dinner. So that's interesting. I might give that a whirl just because I have heard good things. How did you learn about all that? Is that just doing your degree level research that I...
Yes. I hear about it and then I've done every podcast and...
I hear you. I'm exactly the same. I think that's why I always feel like I did sobriety so well because I literally did, you know, degree level research and like laser focused on I'm going to learn everything I need to learn ever about alcohol and what it's doing and how it's destroying things. And I've done that a little bit on my coaching journey as well. I've listened to every podcast, reading all the books. I've got about 20 books on trauma and how to heal. And, you know, it's just so typical, what I think, quite ADHD behavior.
It is. I think I'll be quite surprised if you're not or I'm not.
exactly. That's really fascinating. And great that you're feeling so good, you know. It really comes across, I think. You've got that data before, you know, you've obviously done 10 months and I think it's great to have data points of previous sobriety. That's where I think sometimes people can feel shame. They've done it before or they've done it a few times before. Why have I not managed to get it? No, don't think about it like that. You've built data. You've got a foundation essentially because you will have remembered how good you might have felt. And you will also, you've almost got a blueprint of what not to do this time because there will be things that you didn't do in your 10 months that you know you probably instinctively need to do this time or, you know, try different ways, do more learning or whatever it is. There's always a lot of data, I think, when you've been sober before that can really help make it a long-term thing. So I think that it's, you know, it's great. It's like you seem so invigorated for it and really ready for
really
it.
Good. Really good.
I think that's I think that really makes a difference. When you get into the right gear, you're just ready.
Yeah exactly. 100%.
So what would be your top 3 tips on getting or staying sober based on what you've learned?
I think that definitely listen to podcasts on a daily basis. Read the Quit Lit. For me, I change the wording. I just change the wording to I do not drink anymore. As in, I didn't go. I think before it was all I've given up drinking. Now it's I don't drink anymore. So I don't have, that's a, you know, I don't drink anymore. There's none of that. Is there going to be a way in or a way out? And I feel so much more positive this time. I think probably compared to other people that have said they don't tell people for a long time, I like telling people, just like probably, yeah. I like telling people because if I feel accountable then.
Yeah.
And like I did a sober, not smashed Insta so that I feel accountable, you know, and I can put things on there and it reminds me of why I'm doing it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's finding some support somewhere. I was very lucky for the first probably 8 weeks at least of my sobriety, my best friend was also doing it. So we were a bit like partners in crime this time, you know, and that was quite good to start me off. I've got a very supportive partner who said to me, this isn't a sabbatical off booze anymore, is it, Georgie? I'm like, nah. Because he, you know, he thought it was just a little bit of a thing and then I'd go back the other way. But yeah, he's there and supports me. Finding other things that you enjoy doing, I think, you know, like I say, like gardening, I found the cold water therapy, I've learnt new skills, I've, you know, I've channeled that energy into something else that's better for me.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. I think that people can learn a lot from that bit of advice because you do have to do different things. You do. To do different things. You can't sit in your old life and just not drink because your brain is going to say, well, hang on a minute, we're on this same armchair that we're always on a Friday night with our bottle of red. Where's the wine? And it's going to be very powerful that dopamine's going to be dropping because your brain's going, come on, give me the wine. And that's hard.
Yeah, I've done a lot of non-alcoholic, like call it grown-up drinks. Yes. And to start with, I probably had to have 3 or 4 an evening. Now I can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
If my other half's having alcohol in the house, I'll have a non-alcoholic beer, or I've got some really great non-alcoholic like mixer things that I really enjoy. So that's great. And a nice wine glass, that's an important thing. A nice wine glass. Yeah. And then I feel like I'm sort of joining in. I've taken my stuff to do's with me and put it into tonic, you know what I mean? So I feel like I'm having a nice drink rather than just fizzy water, or, you know, and I think the first time I just did fizzy water and I don't think that was enough for me. And my other gain is my son's getting a little bit older, he's 11, and I want to be able to go to a party and pick him up. I want to be able to him or his friends to ring me from Bristol if they need me to come and get them at any point, and I can get in that car and I can drive, and that is my biggest gain, that I know I can come and help him out at any point, whereas before I couldn't do that.
I know I'm same as you, you know, I've got kids similar age, my oldest is 11 this year, so I suppose in some ways we've been very fortunate in that, okay, maybe when they were much younger we weren't totally present, and there's always, you can always have regrets about that stuff, but personally, I forgive myself for those. But it is nice knowing that at that teenage age where getting ferried about is really important for kids, that that's never going to be a hindrance, you know. And I do feel also, same as you, very fortunate that I'm going to be in a position where I can help.
I think that's a massive one for me. Yeah. And being more present with him and, you know, starting senior school and going through all those things. And I'm not thinking about a glass of wine or being a bit, I'm on a glass a bit, you know, tipsy. I'm there and I can work with him and talk to him. I think to start with, he was a bit disappointed I gave up alcohol, another one.
Yeah.
But because I think he thought he was getting to a teenage, he was going to be a teenager and he could get away with more if I was drunk, which would be true. But then he's decided I'm better for not drinking.
Oh, yeah. Does he? Oh, yeah. What did he say then? Did he tell you that?
Yeah, no, he said you're so much calmer and, you know, and we have great chats.
Oh, yeah. That's so nice.
I have more time for the chats.
Yeah, that's so heartwarming.
Yeah,
that's really lovely. I know what you mean. We're going, we just booked a holiday to go with the family. And of course, when you've got young kids, you just create the holidays really all for them, right? Because they need to have the water slides and all the things and all the all the bells and whistles. And so we're obviously really, really excited about going. And I just always think I feel very fortunate in those situations that even though it's all inclusive, you know, I never think about alcohol now ever, and I never want it. And I just, for me, I really feel like those connections are dead in my brain, which is bizarre, right? Because I bloody loved alcohol, or at least I thought I did, for
such
a long time, and smoking. So, you know, I loved it, loved it. But it's so nice knowing that we're going to go on that trip. And I just don't, I haven't got any of that overhanging distraction around, oh God, let's just go get settled on the plane so that I can, where's the flight attendant? And I want a wine. Or you get there, land, and it's like, oh shit, it's too late to, I'm going to put the kids to bed. Oh, but how do I get my wine if I've got to put the kids? You know, it's just none of that. It's just like, I feel like I can settle into it. It's almost like an old pair of big comfy slippers. And yeah. Sort of walk through, glide through that holiday, really, you know, at a nice pace, obviously deal with a few meltdowns and a few difficult moments because that's life for three kids. But overall, just be very in the moment and just letting it all be about them. Because there's, you know, there'll be times when my husband and I, we cannot wait. There will be times when we get to go on holiday on our own. And then it can just all about us, but for this holiday it's about them, and it's lovely to not have that distraction of alcohol.
I'm about to get on a flight on Saturday morning and we're going to Vietnam for a couple of weeks.
Wow.
Backpacking, my son and myself and my mother.
Oh my God, that is amazing.
Yeah,
what a trip that will be.
I know, that'll be great. And it has been, I've had more time to plan it and what we're doing, and I know everything's organized because I'm hyper organized it, obviously, but but yeah, no, it's really good to know I'm not going to be distracted with the alcohol, and hopefully my mother won't drink so much because I'm not drinking.
I was going to say, that was the first thing that popped into my head, obviously, what will your mum do, and how, but I guess you just have to let her be her and get on with it. You know, you can't control other people, unfortunately.
I know.
What about, just before we kind of wrap up, but you mentioned about your partner, and I know this comes up a lot as well, when a partner, does he still drink?
Yeah.
So when a partner's drinking and then, you know, you stop, what's that landscape like?
He drinks a lot less because I don't buy the wine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's in control of his drinking apart from when he goes out, because then the wheels fall off. But we don't go out as much. He drinks when he goes out, and I find it probably a bit more annoying that he drinks more than anybody else. But I'm still fine with it, because I've been there and I understand that. The only time I've had a wobble was when I went to a meeting and everyone was drinking at the meeting, and I came home and he was drinking a bottle of Malbec. Well, Malbec's my wine, and I just saw red and I was really angry. And he got up in the morning, he said, you all right now? And I went, it was like you were being unfaithful to me. And he went, Georgie, I think your hormones are a bit unbalanced. I was like, but I really did have that rage. And it's the only time it's happened in 132 days, but I was really, my wine.
That's so funny. Malbec was, in the end, Malbec was my wine as well. Yeah. And so I think I would probably have felt quite similar. I was lucky that my husband just doesn't really, he never really drinks. He doesn't really drink anyway, but he wouldn't drink at home, just have a glass of wine. He'd only drink in a social situation, and that would be one, really. So I think in my early sobriety, if I'd come home and he'd suddenly just got a bottle of Malbec, I think I'd probably be like, what? I'm not sure if I would love that either, but yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's funny the way it just sort of, just triggered that response, really, you know.
In the last week or two, just because I've been out with people, I've smelt wine, right? Because I just thought it'd be interesting, a little challenge for myself to smell it. I don't even like the smell of it anymore.
It's so strong as well, don't you think?
Yeah, but as in, you know, I love that smell of that Malbec, and I was like expecting to go, oh, I'd love a glass. Not that I would have one, but I, you know, and I was like, it doesn't actually smell that nice.
So funny.
And I can't believe that, you know, because I love my red wine and my rosé wine.
Yeah. Just shows you how much you can convince yourself to love something, even when you don't really.
Do you know what I mean? It's a bit like a cigarette. We don't like the first cigarette you try, do you? Yeah. But you keep going.
Exactly. You don't like the first cigarette or the first drinks that you have.
Anything.
that you keep going because it's socially acceptable and it's glamorized on telly. And when we were kids, it would have been so much more around, present and prevalent, wouldn't it? It would be all around, all in all the show. You don't see drinking and smoking as much in TV shows and films now.
I think you see a bit more. I think
that back when we were younger, I think people would still be smoking, drinking Coronation Street, for goodness sake. I mean, it was like literally, I think, a much more in your face. I think when I watch stuff on TV now, I'm really aware of when they're drinking and smoking, because I do think it is more unusual to have it. But when it's there, it feels almost a bit offensive for me. I think, well, why do you need that? It's not necessary. That's just, But I think, you know, when I was younger, everyone smoked in cars. Yeah. Everyone smoked in houses.
In pubs, you had to wash your clothes when you got home because you stank.
But I didn't, because I was a smoker, so I didn't smell it, you know, as bad. But, you know, people would complain about it. And, you know, drinking was just, was kind of felt more wild. But yeah, I don't know. That's what I think anyway. So I do think there is definitely data that says younger people are not taking it up as much.
Yeah, which is great news.
It is great news. Yeah, it is great news. So, but Georgia, it's been so nice to catch up with you. It's like a kindred spirit, got lots of similarities. So where can we find you if you're open to sharing your journey?
Well, I have two Instagram accounts. One is Sober Not Smashed.
Yeah.
And the other one is Georgie_Barnes_wellness, which is more ideas what you can do to sort of help yourself on any journey you want to do on wellness or whatever else. Yeah, on looking after yourself.
Brilliant. I love that. What's the next things for you in that space, do you think? What's kind of spiking your interest in that wellness realm?
I want to do more with my Reiki, and I'm doing like mediumship courses and stuff at the moment.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really exciting. It's opened a whole new door for me, this sobriety thing. And I think, you know, my connection to who I really am has really come out. And I think, yeah, I'm working on that, and it's a bit woo-woo, I know, but it's great. And it's it's a really good world. I love it.
Oh, I love that. Oh, I'm excited to see what happens. I'm going to follow the wellness for sure. All right. Thank you so much for being a guest on my show and for sharing your story and being so open. And I hope you have an amazing holiday.
Thank you.
Yeah, like days away, isn't it? You're going to do that. So, yeah, I hope you have a wonderful trip. And thank you to everybody else. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.